Hi, I am Kelly Rotring, the host of Your Life as a Story podcast. I will be talking to everyday people in our community who have interesting, unique, and unexpected life stories. Thanks for joining us. Today I talk with Heather about the loss of her first husband, Jeff, life as a young widow, and finding love again. We also have a conversation about parenting our children as they get older. Hello, Heather. Thank you for joining me today and agreeing to talk with me. How have you been?
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good. It's good to see you. I was thinking about how long we've known each other, and I think we've known each other for at least 20 years.
I think you're probably right.
And yeah, I was thinking that you had the unique experience of being my boss. I'm very sorry about that. But I was thinking, you know, she was my boss, but she became a friend and we're still friends. So I think that's a testament to the great person that you are. But so I know that you and I were trying to figure out what we could talk about, because there's a lot of things that we have in common or that we could talk about, and just, you know, life as a busy mom and, you know, wife and employee and all that stuff. But I thought one of the things that we could start talking about is your experience with losing your first husband at such a young age, and especially because you had two young children at the time. And would you mind kind of walking us through that a little bit?
Sure. So I guess it was 2009. Jeff was 40 years old. I was 37. We had two children. The youngest, Riley, was 3 and had just celebrated her 3rd birthday. And Caitlin was 8. It was November 1st, so it was right around the Halloween season. And, you know, we'd done the whole Halloween thing that night. Dropped my kids off at my parents' to have a date night, which doesn't happen often when you have two children, little ones. We had gone out for dinner. He mentioned a little bit that he wasn't feeling well, which was odd, because he actually asked me to drive home that night from dinner, and we did. Didn't think too much of it. And the next morning we got up, woke up, I guess I should say. And I just remember I had my head resting on his chest, and I'm like, wow, that just sounds funny. Which, hindsight, obviously he was having some sort of heart issue. He didn't say he wasn't feeling well at that point. He's like, let's just get up. So we got up, and that's when he passed. He fell to the ground, and he passed away of a major heart attack. In hindsight, I see the blessing of it, in that it was just him and I at that moment there together, because the girls were still at my parents, so they didn't live that part of the trauma, which was a blessing. And I also found comfort in that it was just him and me. Backstory, him and I eloped, so it was just him and I when we really started off. And again, when it ended, it was just him and I. So that was kind of beautiful in a way.
Right. So how long had you two been married?
It was just shy of our 14th wedding anniversary when he passed.
Okay.
We had been
and had he had, I'm sorry, had he had any like heart issues, known heart issues?
He had high blood pressure, which he had inherited from his mom. But that was about it. Never any complaints of any heart issues or doctor's appointments for that sort of thing or anything like that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry that you had that experience and that happened to you. And then, because it was so sudden and so quick, what was life like right afterwards?
Definitely a whirlwind. I can say that first year was pretty much a pretty dense fog for me. just, you know, going through the movements, doing what I had to do.
Right.
Thankfully, the girls were there because I think that's the only reason I did the things I had to do. So yeah, it was pretty tough. It was definitely tough. A lot to process and plant your feet again and figure out what was next.
And were there any organizations or therapies or anything that you did or that helped with you and the kids going through that process?
Yeah, absolutely. Somehow I was smart enough at that point to know that I couldn't do it myself.
Okay.
And I had a really good friend that was a great social worker, and I just reached out to her. And she referred me to a therapist, which was immense for me, who then referred me to somebody for the girls. So I got girls and myself in therapy within the first month. And then through them, they recommended Olivia's House, which is a grief house for children. Funny thing was, both the girls went through at different times. That organization requires it to be at least 3 to 6 months after your loss, which I didn't
understand. Is that a national organization or is that just based in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, just in Pennsylvania. They have one in Hanover and one in York.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's supposed to be for the children. Both went through at different times based on when they had the right sort of grouping available to offer it. The girls really enjoyed it, but what I found, it really did, I would say it saved my life. It really helped me process everything and understand what the girls were going through and how I could be present and how to deal with my own grief.
Okay. All right. That's a good resource.
Yeah. Amazing. And a lot of people come up from Maryland for it. So it, you know, it's probably, I'd say, for Pennsylvania, Maryland area.
And then was there, what did you find that people did for you that was the most helpful during that period of time? Or was there anything?
Being present, that just being present, you know, just showing up, being there for me, not putting any expectations on me, just like, hey, I mean, I remember when you and David came up. You're like, we're just coming up for the day. And, you know, just have somebody show up and just be present was most helpful.
Okay. Yeah, because I was thinking about that as far as like my own grief journey. And a lot of times people avoid you because they don't know what to say.
Right.
Or it makes them uncomfortable. And a lot of times I would just say, just tell me, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do, but here I am.
Right, right.
And that's enough a lot of times.
Right, just the acknowledgement that while you're going through something real heavy and I'm here to shoulder it with you, I think is key. And it's interesting now when other people go through the loss of a spouse and loss of a loved one, I'm like, I don't know what to say. Like I should, maybe I should have some answer, but I don't. So it's just being present.
Right. A lot of time. Well, my saying is this just really sucks. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. This just really sucks.
Really sucks. There is no reason for it. It just sucks.
Yeah. And, I don't know if you heard that everything happens for a reason. That saying still to this day just makes my head want to pop off my shoulders.
Same. Yeah. And there's actually a book out about that. And I wish I could remember the name of the author, but it's basically everything happens for a reason and other big lies or something to that story. So I think
is it Kate Bowler?
I think it might be.
Because she has a podcast too, yeah, called Everything Happens.
Yes.
And that's based on her journey with cancer and kind of growing up in the Christian community too. Yeah. Hearing, I think that when people say everything happens for a reason, it makes them feel better.
Sure.
It does nothing for the person on the receiving end, other than maybe make us feel a little worse.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that you can learn from everything that happens,
yeah.
But I don't in any way believe that things happen for a reason.
I would definitely agree with that. Definitely.
Yeah. And I can remember, I think I told you this story. I can remember after Parker died, going to Target and walking through the store and just being amazed at how life goes on and walking through the store, like just completely devastated and knowing that my life had been completely turned upside down and people were in the store shopping and smiling and thinking, how can this be? Like, how does this work?
Yeah,
like it was so mind blowing. You know, it was just weird. Grief is just weird.
Absolutely. And you're like, how can people just be still? Do they not understand what happened? Do they, you know, and you know, so at some parts I wanted to scream out. Everybody just stopped. I had a sailor's mouth first of all at that point because I don't know. I guess
you did. Get out of here!
My God, whew. It was bad. sometimes I revert to that when I start talking about it. I'll try not to.
You can cuss on here. Yes, you can say whatever you want.
Okay. You know, I would just be like, don't you fucking understand what just happened? Everybody needs to stop and understand this. And then on the other token, I'd turn around and be like, don't talk about it. You don't know about it. Don't talk about it. Let's pretend it didn't happen. I can't deal with it right now. So for the poor people that were really close in my life at that time, they probably were thinking I was psychotic because I'd be like, don't you understand what happened? Shut up. I don't want to hear you talk about that. Back and forth. It was a mess.
Right. Yeah. So right. Like tiptoeing around like, okay, so can we talk about this or can we not? And sometimes you don't even know yourself.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a tough time. It's a really interesting journey. I think the one thing I've learned is that journey just doesn't end.
No, it doesn't.
And if that's the one thing you could tell somebody going through on a grief journey, there's no timeline. We all know that. And it's just, it's going to be forever.
Yeah. I do think it gets easier in aspects, but it just kind of changes.
Yep. It does.
I think the first year is the hardest because you go through all the firsts. You go through, and I don't know if for you, I know for me leading up to like the anniversary or the time leading up to the first whatever was always the most difficult than the actual date.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember my therapist, that was one of the first things she told me. She's like, in this first year, she said, don't make any big decisions and just get through the first year. So, I mean, that was my one track mind, you know. First year. And of course he died November 1. So then we go into the whole holiday season, which was atrocious, you know, a wedding anniversary followed by February, you know, the month of love followed by Caitlin and I both had birthdays that month. So it was just that whole first year really, really sucked. And then Riley's birthday, you know, is the end of September, which just every year kicks off that season for me. There's just this,
okay.
I just feel it in my bones.
Yeah.
So
did you ever read that book, Body Keeps the Score?
No, I have not.
So I've started to read it, but it's a pretty heavy read. So I haven't finished it, but it talks about kind of how you store trauma and events in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true, because I would find sometimes I would just be like feeling funky or not feeling great. I mean, and this is almost 20 years ago.
Right.
And then I would look at the calendar and I would be like, oh yeah, I remember this happened or this. And yeah, your body just somehow can kind of remind you of things.
Yeah, it definitely knows. Which interesting. I don't know if you're still working with the geriatric population, but
I am.
Okay, and working with them, I often wonder, you know, oh, is something going on or had something going on at this time in their life that they just can't verbalize right now, but that's why they're acting the way they're acting, right? Like they're at that age, I'm sure they experienced so much trauma that
Right.
we don't
And that generation, they didn't do a lot of therapy and a lot of sharing and a lot of processing like our generation does. We talk about everything. We're all about feelings and what are you thinking? How are you feeling? What's your body telling you? That generation was not like that at all.
No, mom was the word back then, you know.
Definitely. Yep.
Keep
They didn't
moving
talk
forward.
about things.
Nope. So I often wonder that with my clients, you know.
So after, he kind of got through that first year, when did you and Dan meet? 'Cause I remember you kind of met him sooner than you were expecting.
Right. Well, I knew him from before Jeff passed because I had worked with him. And then right after the 1 year mark, somehow on Facebook, you know, we started chatting. And he came to visit once, helped me with some things around the house, and I was like, I'm feeling something, right? This is interesting. However, I did hear from him for months then, and I was like, okay, well, okay, whatever. But then somehow we reconnected again, and yeah, we decided we were going to make a go of it. I had some prerequisites, I guess I should say, in my head. One was whoever I was going to, you know, try another relationship with couldn't have been married before because I didn't want any baggage. I don't know. This is my head. I preferred that he not live around me because if it didn't work out, I didn't want to have to see him.
That's a pretty good idea.
And I thought he needed to be older than me because I thought he'd be more mature. So those were my three things. Well, he fit all three of those things. So
There you go.
there you go. We made a go of it and yeah, we got married.
And
So
how long have you two been married?
this year will be 11 years.
11 years.
Yeah. So yeah, after Jeff passed, and I came out of the whole fog thing or started to come out of the fog, you know, I knew I wanted a partner in life. I wanted somebody to do life with because it had been so good. I just couldn't imagine not doing that again. So yeah, I was pretty open to meeting someone, and I think that's a big part of the battle. You know, I knew nobody's going to replace Jeff, but I wanted a partner again.
And do you find that people, I don't know, other people had any opinions about that or thoughts about that?
Oh, there were plenty of opinions on that one. As you know, I have a sister and a mom. Both of them struggled with that a good bit. I remember when my therapist told me it was getting close to the 1 year mark, and she told me, you know, you're not married anymore. She's like, so I don't know why you wear those rings.
Oh,
Yeah, your
wow.
face. Yeah. I wanted to punch her in the face. As much as I loved her, I was like, ouch, you know.
That was tough.
It was some pretty tough love there. But she was right. She was right. I am not married anymore. And my name may say, you know, Heather Braswell, but it's not Heather Braswell. It's Heather. So I decided, okay, yeah, I guess I got to take my rings off. So I took my rings off and saw my sister a couple of days later, and she about had a meltdown. I was like, whoa, whoa, what's this all about? She's like, well, I can't believe you took your rings off and you don't have to do that. And I said, for me, I have to do this. You know, I need to move forward. I need to realize I'm not a wife anymore. I'm a single mother. So that was hard. And I'm not sure to this day what my mom's story is, but I would say she still really hasn't accepted it going on 11 years later. So,
Really?
yeah.
that's a shame because you and Dan have built a beautiful life.
Right. I mean, it hasn't been easy. It isn't all roses, but, you know, 14, almost 15 years now, I look back on me and Jeff, and it wasn't all roses.
You know? Well, no relationship is, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I can't change somebody else's mind. I can just live my life.
That's true. And that's one thing that, you know, I've been working on is just everybody's life is different. And what works for your life is not what's going to work for my life. And it's really nobody else's business. I mean, you know, because like your family and your family unit and your experiences are different and unique. And so what applies to you and happens to you is not what applies to me and happens to me.
Right. Right. And we all process and we all have our own goals and ideas and we move forward with those. Is it always the best idea? No, but that's my mistake to make, right? So.
That's how we learn.
Exactly. Exactly. Learn and grow.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you met Dan and I'm glad that you got remarried. And I think you guys have built a beautiful life and it's wonderful to see you happy with somebody else. I think that would be the main priority, especially of your family, is to see you happy and thriving and the kids doing well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So be it.
Right. So how old are the kids now?
Oh, gosh. Caitlin just turned 23 and Riley is 17.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Don't you find this stage of parenting to be interesting?
Yes, interesting is a very good term.
mine are 19 and 16. And I don't know about you, but I know that my kids have gone through some pretty heavy stuff and hard things. And it's strange because I want help. I want to talk to other people about it, but I also need to respect their privacy.
Yes. Yes.
And it's tricky. It's hard.
It really is. The big thing is their privacy. Like it's their story to tell, but it impacts me so much.
Right.
And that's such and it's a like hard how do boundary. We get
right? But how do we get help or know what to do if we can't talk to other people about it? That's kind of where I am with things. Like I don't know, like where do you find information or where do you find other families that are going through similar experiences or hard times if nobody's talking about it?
Right. I don't know. I don't know that answer. It's tough. I mean, I try to put myself in their shoes. And if I'm their age and my mom's talking to X, Y, and Z about what's going on in my life, I mean, I'd probably be hurt and angry and upset. But being at my age, I know it's just because I want to help. Right? Like I'm only talking to somebody because I want to help and I want to figure out how we can figure this out. Make it better.
Yeah. It's tricky. I have a friend that says she's listening to a podcast. I think it's called Bite Your Tongue or something. And it's about parenting older kids as your kids get older. And if they make decisions that you may not necessarily agree with, but kind of letting them have their own experiences. And as a parent, just biting your tongue. So I haven't listened to that one yet. It's on my list to check out.
I think I might want to check that one out myself.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't find parenting to get easier as they get older.
No, 100% easier the smaller they are.
Right?
Because you can make the decisions. You're in charge. I like that.
Yeah, you can dress them. You're in charge of who they hang out with, you know, when you made play dates or whatever, right? What they were eating.
Yep, where they're at. You're right. Yeah, so much easier.
Yeah. And now it's just, oh, yeah.
You know, they say, you know, your children are your heart walking outside of you. Ugh, so true.
That is very true. That is very true. So is there anything else that you would like people to know about your experience or your advice that you have for anybody that becomes like a widow, widower unexpectedly?
You just have to find yourself again. I think that was the big thing. And I don't know if this goes for a lot of people, but, you know, Jeff and I grew up together. So when he passed, I had spent more of my life with him than I had without him. Like, we've been together 19 years. I met him when I was 18. So my identity was Jeff's wife. That's who I was. And it would have been real easy after he passed to jump into Caitlin's mom and Riley's mom, right? And just play that role. I had to find who I was so I could be the better mom, the better person, the better spouse.
So that was a journey. And how would you say you did that? I know you said you went through therapy. Was there anything else that helped you on that journey?
Therapy, a lot of reading, journaling really helped. Yeah, and just getting out in nature just really allows me to open up and feel safe and really go inside to see what's going on inside of me.
Okay, were there any books that were particularly impactful or helpful for you?
Wow. I've read so many, Kel, I can't tell you.
Okay.
but podcasts, you know, one of the first podcasts I started listening to was We Can Do Hard Things. With Glenn Doyle.
Yeah. I know you and I have talked about that. I love that podcast.
And that really started me on that journey and looking into podcasts. Her and Brené Brown. And Brené
Brown. That's another
probably,
one.
Yeah, her books are probably really one of the top couple that I've read.
They're both favorites of mine.
Yeah. So
the We Can Do Hard Things. That's funny because, well, I love podcasts, and that's so there's been many times that we sat at dinner with the kids, and I've started a conversation by saying, I was listening to a podcast today. And they're like, oh, God. Uh-huh. And well, they had a psychiatrist, a therapist on, and I think we should try this. We're going to do this activity together. And they're like, oh, great. So David said you should start a podcast that's called I Was Listening to a Podcast Today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I know when we get on the car and we're going for, you know, on a long trip or something, I'll be like, yeah, I'm going to turn a podcast on. Dan's like, oh God, what are we listening to now?
I'm going to teach you something today. I want you to actually listen to this because this might be helpful.
It might be. You might find this interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I've done that to David. I've sent him a few links to different podcasts, and one of them he said, I'm actually pretty offended that you sent me this. because I don't think that pertains to me whatsoever. we had to have a conversation about, well, this is actually where I was coming from or what I was thinking.
Let me explain that a little bit.
Yeah. So sometimes it's been good, sometimes not so much.
Sometimes we miss the mark. That's okay. Just try oh, to throw everybody.
I know. It's definitely a journey. I mean, and we're on our own journeys ourselves, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just doing the best that we can.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I think one of the biggest things I've learned is to accept life as bittersweet. I'd say for a couple years, I really tried to fight it. Like, I just really want a joyous moment without the pang of pain attached to it. But I think maybe that pain makes the joy even greater, if that makes sense.
Better. You can appreciate it more.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think from here on out, it will be bittersweet.
Bittersweet. Mm-hmm. So what do you find, what brings you joy? Like, where do you get moments of joy from?
It can be the little things, just the warm sunlight and just realizing, okay, that I am okay. To seeing the girls succeed at things and seeing them actually happy or laughing or feeling loved just is very joyous for me.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice to hear. I know that, I was thinking about, you know, our relationship, you and I, and even though we don't see each other that much, you're still somebody that I have a lot of love for. And I trust you and you know, you've shown up for me in great ways. And I've just felt like you've taken this journey with a lot of grace. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you've helped a lot of people and people know that they can come and talk to you and be themselves with you, which is a wonderful quality to have.
Well, I have to say, you kind of led me down that path. So thank you.
Oh, thanks.
You really have.
Thank you. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about or you wanted to share?
Nothing specific.
All right. Well, I appreciate so much your time and for being willing to talk to me. I appreciate you so much and I love you a lot.
Love you too. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Life as a Story podcast. If you could like, subscribe, and share, it would be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much.